Here we go on a Friday.
And you know what? There actually is a lot of news. It'd be interesting to hear Tom's point of view.
Oh, hey, Tom. Hey, Blue Friday. Can't wait. Behind enemy lines, who are we talking to this week?
I was thinking at home we should do like the best of enemy behind enemy lines.
Yeah.
That's just too much work.
This will be the rubber match between us and the 49ers. The third game. Who's going to finally... It's tough. I'm not even going to watch the games this week.
You know what that Rye said to me? That as much as I'm completely and absolutely obsessed with sports, I don't even care anymore. Just the whole thing just went out.
I know.
And he goes, and now Blazers are not doing well. Yeah. The Mariners are not going to have a good season. He goes, it's going to be a long, long stretch for me until September.
That's right.
It's tough. Seriously, you're not going to watch? You don't care?
I realize I have opera tickets on Sunday. So, but usually that would kill me. Yeah. Instead, I'm going, hey, this will be great.
Didn't you miss? Weren't you watching something? You were at the something awards.
Critical Awards. No, last Sunday. This is. We didn't get a chance to talk about this. It was at the Critics' Choice Awards.
These were normally literally doing news.
at the same time as the Seahawks game. And I managed to go through that, live in a bubble. I'd recorded the thing, so I rushed back to my hotel room and watched for the next 4 hours on my phone the horrible Seahawks game that ripped the heart out from me.
By the way, I had said to you, you're sitting there at some Critics' Choice. People next to you don't care about the Seahawks.
Yeah.
You could have turned to any one of them. Hey, who's winning the Seahawks game? They wouldn't have known.
Yeah. They might not have known because they didn't have their phones out.
No, listen,
there are a lot of people that care about sports and movies just like me.
When Seattle stores the belongings taken from the homeless cleanup, few get them back. So the Seattle Times has a big piece. And basically, Jenny Durkin, your mayor, has gone in. They used to do like 400 and some sweeps. They've moved up to more than 700 sweeps. They go in there. They clean up all the needles, the syringes, the stolen bicycles, the stolen barbecues, everything that's stolen from people that are at these homeless camps.
You don't just stress the stolen stuff.
Well, how else do you get yourself a barbecue when you have no money?
Just because they don't have the receipts.
No, they take the receipts and trade those in for cash so you can buy more drugs. But all the stuff that's taken at the homeless sites, they're supposed to hold them. They've got some sort of system, but it doesn't seem to be well administrated. And people are complaining that where's my stuff when you take it, especially when it happens to be medicines.
Well, interestingly enough, not that many people are complaining. It took the Seattle Times to do this pretty deep investigation and get access with a request to the city's data to establish this. Because in some ways, people, this should be good news. They say the businesses are happy and a lot of neighbors are happy that Jenny Durkin has doubled the encampment cleanups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's sort of, if that's the positive shine, this is the darker side of that. That when you do these sweeps, a lot of times people's medical information, their
1% of the time,
their drugs,
they lose their drugs, right?
Well, I don't know a percentage.
It's 1%. Yeah,
but I mean that seems kind of low. But the idea here is that what's happening is that we are doing an efficient job, maybe, of moving these people along, but we're doing an inefficient job of helping them, because once you lose your ID, for instance, or once you lose your prescription pills that are maybe helping you fight your addiction, you then have a hard time getting back access to that. You can't refill your prescription if you don't have the original prescription bottle and all of that. And so this is a pretty in-depth article all about the complications that are involved. You have to go through a number of bureaucratic hoops in order to get your stuff back. Mm-hmm. And these people's lives are already kind of disorganized enough that that's tough. Now, a lot of the times they do get the stuff back, but it takes a while. And the concern is, what happens to all those people? There's something like 32 people that didn't get their stuff returned out of the 700 cleanups. Those people are maybe in worse shape, and maybe it could be adding to the addiction problem and adding to the social service hassles.
Well, you can get – the reason you can't get the – if your drugs are taken, so it's 1%, 700, so that means seven times, right?
What the statistic John is citing is that 1% of the items that are collected by the city are medications or medical devices.
Right.
So that doesn't necessarily mean that only 1% of the homeless population is that's what gets taken from them. That's just in the pile of things, it makes up 1% of the pile.
Okay, so yeah. But that's the most important part of the pile.
Well, you can get it, Tom. Here's what you do. Let's say you're taking some sort of painkiller, right?
Yeah.
They give you a script for 30. They will not give you more.
That's
I know
right.
this from you that know, thing. I have lost my stupid
exactly.
organization drugs.
And you're not even homeless.
Not yet. Apparently, I'm one paycheck away. So the idea is that when you lose the drugs, they don't give you. They can't give you more.
Right.
So you got to wait.
Got to wait
the
month,
and then the end of the month, and then you get more.
Leg is killing you. And if you don't have your ID, you can't get all. You can't get all this information that you need to apply for various, you know, social services. So
right.
I mean, it really screws up their life. So Seattle Times has not just exposed this problem. They say, well, what has worked in other cities? And right now, the suggestion I think the article has mm-hmm. is that we do like San Diego does and some other cities where we have much more, we pour much more attention and money into storage services. Like, John just pulled an hypodermic needle out of his
pants,
side or pants. I can't quite tell. Anyway,
see, I was going to ride my motorcycle
that's right,
in there.
Yeah, now
it's all right. I can show you. You're a man. See that? I was going to wear my motor. I was going to ride my motorcycle.
You're
very
wearing
cold.
Your long johns.
And yes, I'm my long johns.
So they have much bigger and more efficient storage facilities.
Yes.
Now that would cost money. Seattle would have to pour, I don't know, a couple million dollars into creating buildings that have storage facilities.
Mm-hmm. And then you got to pay people to be there.
Much easier access.
Yeah.
Right now we've got one person. You have to call the person. They'll look it up and then they will deliver it to mm-hmm. you. You don't come to this. And so the suggestion here is this might, in the long run, be worth it. Whatever X amount of money it's costing will balance the X amount of hassles
yeah.
that these people have to go through, and maybe increasing drug addiction and hypodermic needles like yours.
Mm-hmm.
There are all sorts of possibilities that we can look at. And Seattle admits that we maybe can do a better job in terms of storage to help these people get better access to retrieving them. So,
Jewish.
I mean, it's a good article, though. I mean, I think they do a really nice job.
They did a lot of research. They call other yeah. cities that have the same problem. I think you could probably do a better. It's interesting that they can't store anything that's wet. So can you imagine how much stuff just has to be thrown away?
Yeah, that's
can't
cause of,
store because it's wet.
Because of mold issues and
yeah.
stuff. Yeah. By the way, they think Portland maybe has the best, and it was forced through a legal settlement. They got this huge property storage warehouse where they collect things. And that might be the next step for Jenny mm-hmm. Durkin's administration to consider.
Yeah. Do they, when they collect the stuff, do they ever try to find the rightful owners of the bicycles?
You know, bicycles didn't come up once, John, so maybe they didn't.
How about
find
shopping
any.
Carts?
Well, shopping carts, they have normally in the handles, they have where they came from, you know?
Yeah.
Albertsons, when Albertsons was still around.
Oh, my. Why not this? Take some of the homeless people that can't get work and give them the job of sorting the stuff and tracking the stuff, and then they could run this sort of redistribution thing where the people could come in, claim their stuff, and then get it back to them. Huh?
Okay, good. John, you're a solutions-oriented individual.
Yes, I am, Tom. 11 of the U.S. troops were hurt. Remember when the Iranians blasted, 10 missiles or 12 missiles went into a strike site, and they had gotten fair warning that the missiles were coming. We're basically just as a show to try to keep the people happy here in Iran. And we moved a bunch of stuff out of the way. We had gotten forthcoming news that it was coming. But 11 individuals serving in the military had suffered some type of concussion or have some injuries. Originally, they said no one was injured. I mean,
that's
no one was
right.
hurt. And killed. Nobody was killed was the original thing.
No. But nobody. They say no casualties.
Casualties.
And casualties in military talk means injuries or deaths.
Oh, does it?
That's.
Okay.
I mean, that's according to the this article. And so that's why they're kind of raising some eyebrows. Well, why would the administration be, you know, spreading falsehoods?
Now, what Mike Lyon says?
Do we have Mike?
The Pentagon wanted to correct the record for these concussion symptoms well after the fact that the symptoms showed themselves from some of the soldiers on the ground there, and to err on the side of caution, wanted to make sure that the soldiers get the proper treatment that they need.
Okay. He says this won't change the policy in Iran at all.
I don't think this changes the equation. The president's line in the sand has always been U.S. deaths and or other serious casualty. And I'm not saying this is not a serious casualty, but this is more or less kind of injury that can take place in a training environment. Loud explosions, they weren't prepared for it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
So a lot more people were treated for concussions on the site. The reason this is getting the headline is that 11 of them were hurt bad enough that they were sent to different countries, different bases to be checked out. But again, At this point, one could argue that this isn't any kind of intentional falsehood coming from the Trump administration, because concussions often take a while for it to become clear.
Somebody might have headaches, you can't sleep, or you're vomiting, you have disorientation and other things like that.
Yeah.
Okay, so there we go. It's not a big cover-up, right?
Not necessarily.
All right. Not like the cover-up from Afghanistan. That story, you know what's so weird about that story?
Which story are we talking about now?
The fact that for the longest time we were fed false information about what was happening in Afghanistan to give it positive spins. I think the Post did a great job on breaking that thing. Like about a week ago. See, you don't even remember it. It came out, it got buried in a whole bunch of other news as well, and just kind of went away.
Yeah?
Yeah. See your interest level? Very low. Very low. I'm going to give you an injection.
Wait, is that, what's the Afghanistan party? Is this the Washington Post story? Yeah, that was a big story that honestly, it was weird how much attention it got.
I was in L.A. trying to do my best not to track
fantasy
any sports
world.
Because I didn't know, because I didn't want to know about the Seahawks game, so I refused to even look at my phone because I was afraid someone's going to link it. I was in a weekend bubble.
No. How about that senator from Arizona who you don't like, McSally, who, by the way...
I liked her until now.
Oh, okay. So some reporter from CNN comes up to her...
Manu Raju, who's just a regular, standard reporter. He's good. Everybody likes him.
Really?
Yeah.
Senator McSally, should the Senate consider new evidence as part of the impeachment trial? Man, you're a liberal. You're
not going to comment, Senator, about this?
Buddy. You're a liberal hack.
What's... Well, yeah,
put a buddy in there.
What's interesting about Martha McSally is she lost a Senate election in Arizona. But when John McCain died, they had two senatorial positions up. It was two women running for office, mm-hmm. and the Democratic woman won. Martha McSally was then appointed.
Uh-huh.
What was interesting about when Martha McSally won the first election, she was very gracious and mm-hmm. said, listen, we need to bring this country together. You know, this is congratulations. It was a hard fight. She was very... You know, she seemed to be going against the grain of these tribalism components.
Yeah.
And now this is the most blatant example of tribalism we have by going after the
media.
Maybe
he wrote something or she doesn't like what he reports. No, that's not what it is.
No, I mean, again, this is what most of the people said about him. In fact, Geraldo Rivera was on Fox and Friends this morning and he was saying, he is not a liberal hack. Manu Raju is, a straightforward reporter. Everybody on both sides of the aisle appear to like him.
Yeah.
She just went after him, probably because he's with CNN, but maybe more likely she just decided to adopt that kind of all media sucks kind of attitude.
She's not apologizing.
Do you regret what you said?
No, Laura, I do not. And I said it again.
Some Mormons have a cold.
As I went in, I said, you're a liberal hack, buddy. As you know, I mean, these CNN reporters, but many of them around the Capitol, they are so biased. They are so in cahoots with the Democrats. They so can't stand the president. And they run around trying to chase, Republicans and ask trapping questions. I'm a fighter pilot. You know, I called it like it is. And that's what we see out of the mainstream media and especially CNN every single day. So obviously, I'm going to tell the truth and I did it today. And it's laughable how they've responded.
Well, they were saying,
the media's
based on
very
a mutually
upset.
Agreed fact of her slur against Manu Raju today, I think it's fair to say that McSally's days of engaging in rational discussion are over.
There was this incredible and frankly shocking moment that was beneath the dignity of how a senator should behave.
And it is a very incredibly telling moment.
I mean, it's obviously indecent and based on a desire to not have accountability.
My reaction was that her behavior was disgraceful. Behaving disgracefully.
It was disgusting. It was awful. It was an awful, awful thing that she did. It's awful.
Oh my God.
Called him names.
She thinks that that's going to score a political point.
I mean, it goes on. Yeah. The media is so upset by
that. First off, that wasn't just the media, John. Those are CNN people. So they're talking about their colleagues. So I think if somebody went after Jacob, you yourself would probably say, that's uncalled for, McSally. Senator McSally. Jacob's a nice, upstanding young man, just like Manu Raju.
Based on the mutually agreed fact.
More CNN people. They're all upset.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that the story is, she has really seemed to turn. Now, I don't know enough about her other than her gracious, I don't know what you'd call it, apologies or acceptance of the election kind of congratulations stuff. But it sounds like, and I think this is what's telling about it, is that she has gone, all out Trump, which is fine. That may get her reelected in Arizona. She's in a tough battle right now.
They
pointed to her fundraising problems. She's running against the astronaut.
Yes.
And she is, you know, behind him by, you know, like half of the he's gotten twice as much money as she has. So maybe this is smart because the Trump administration immediately turned it around and said, hey, this is great. Yeah. Thumbs up. Martha, send money to Martha McSally for Congress.
She took a page from Nancy Pelosi, who after snapping at the reporter saying, Trump, don't mess with me, the next day was selling T-shirts. So I think the same thing, McSally does the same thing. In fact, she's already doing it, fundraising off of the, liberal hack thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good for her. Make money. Thank you, Nancy, for teaching us how to respond to reporters and make money.
Nancy is not the first one to do that. I think Marshawn was.
Right. Okay, we don't have time. Let's see, stories to talk about later on. By the way, just one little thing. For some reason, the Republicans are handing out flashcards to their senators on how they're supposed to respond. But this is not as a result or sort of a backlash of McSally. Just, you're supposed to tell the reporters when they go to ask you something, I don't have time right now.
These are the tips. Please move out of my way.
Yes.
You are preventing me from doing my job. Please excuse me, I'm trying to get to the Senate floor. Please excuse me, I need to get to a hearing meeting. Please do not touch me.
Right back. KIEL Keel Mortgage. This is normally the time I would admonish Andrew to call. I'd say, hey, Andrew, get Laura Keel on the phone. Kind of color of her hair, but no more. Seahawks season over.
We can still root for the Tennessee Titans, though.
Why?
Because they were not one of the top seeds. They've knocked off the hated New England Patriots.
Okay.
And then they surprised the world by beating the heavily favored Baltimore Ravens.
But can they get you a mortgage? No, they can't, Tom. They can't. But Keel Mortgage can. 1-888-778-KIEL. All the great people over there, Keel Mortgage, just waiting to hear from you. Go get it now. Get in touch with them. All right, let's see. The like I tune in when there's about 2 weeks left, and why Trump has a huge advantage over the Dems with low information voters. Now, low information voters was a term that came out. I looked this up. Back in 1999 or 1991, low information signaling. And it was a book called The Reasoning Voter, Communications of Persuasion, the Presidential Campaign. And basically what they found when it came to low information voters, they tended to be moderate.
Is that right?
Yep.
Okay.
Let's see. Rather than high information voters, low information voters are less likely to vote.
Yes.
When they do, they generally vote for candidates they find personally appealing.
Yes. This is the problem with democracy.
They tend to be a swing voter. They tend to vote a split ticket or more than well-informed voters do. And they also just basically assume that if it's a woman running, she's a liberal. If it's a black candidate running, he or she is a conservative. And if it's a white candidate, they just assume.
What, John? That didn't make any sense.
Low information voters
think a black candidate,
will assume that a female and black candidate are liberal.
No, okay. You said a black was a conservative. That's what we want to correct the record.
They will assume that the black candidate is a liberal. They will assume that the female candidate
is a liberal
as well.
Okay.
Yes.
There
we go. All right. So there you go. That's the idea of what a low information voter is.
Low information voters.
So Vanity Fair takes a look at this and says the problem for Democrats is, unfortunately, we're about to also point out something that our listeners have been saying for a while now, is that what, Tom?
Low information voters are the swing voters, but there's a bigger divide between left and right in this country. Mm-hmm. It's between people who follow politics and people who don't. Mm-hmm. And the people who don't are the ones that swing elections.
Yes.
That's what's fascinating to me about this, is that you always hear about the New York, the Beltway bubble, that things that are important in Congress, the idea that what Elizabeth Warren said or didn't say to Bernie Sanders is somehow viable. It doesn't matter to most mm-hmm. people in the country.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter to most people in the country who don't care about politics.
Yes.
It matters as much to somebody in Minnesota as it does in D.C. if you follow politics.
Sure.
The real division is people who don't follow politics. And the best and most telling description. The reason they have this in the headline, like, I'll tune in when there's 2 weeks left. Somebody compared the presidential race to The Bachelor.
Oh.
They say The Bachelor, you know, they start off with like 25 possibilities. It's just too many. Uh-huh. I'll tune in the last 2 weeks when they're down to the final two or three.
I want to know when he's sleeping with
in.
Just the final four.
Yeah, right. I know. Yeah. They're special.
They're
night
all in
together.
Love.
That people, and it's not that, because low information voters just sounds like a fancy way to say dumb. But he says, no, these people aren't dumb. They're normal. Mm-hmm. They've got regular lives. They do not follow all this stuff. And that is why Donald Trump won the election, not because of people who knew a lot about Donald Trump's policies. They knew Donald Trump because he had filtered his consciousness, had filtered into their lives through TV. So people knew Donald Trump, had an idea of Donald Trump, kind of a brash,
sure,
fired sort of guy.
Yeah.
And they might not have agreed with one thing with his politics, but he realized, and they said some, maybe inadvertently, but maybe instinctively, he just realized that he turned it into a bigger-than-life issue to get people that don't care about politics or don't like politics or don't trust politicians to say, yeah, but I'll vote for that guy. Uh-huh. It's kind of a stick in the eye. And the problem with the Democrats, this is based on a series of podcasts that are going to be released this year called In the Wilderness. Last year, it was all about how do the Democrats lose to Trump. Mm-hmm. This is all about how they're going to lose to Trump again, sounds like, are the dangers of it.
Yeah.
It's because you need to inspire people. The last person that inspired low-information voters or people that didn't like politics, Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Barack Obama managed to break through a lot of this and said, oh, he's a different guy.
Yeah, well, he showed up everywhere, right? Same thing. He was on Oprah Winfrey, Time Magazine, Newsweek. He was on the cover of Time, I don't know how many times, with a halo behind him or Oprah talking about he is the one that we've been waiting for.
That's right. But
the media adored him. You couldn't turn the television set on without seeing Barack Obama.
Well, first off, there's no saturation like Donald Trump's saturation. But Barack Obama was different. He was distinctive enough that he broke through. But regular Democrats, including all the Democrats right now that we have, none of them are really breaking through.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody to crystallize that. And it changes the dynamic of who you think, if you're a Democrat, who you think maybe you should nominate. What Bernie Sanders has always said is you need somebody to inspire people that aren't inspired to vote. There are a lot of connections, they said, between Sanders voters and Trump voters, not in terms of their policies, but in terms of their enthusiasm for somebody taking on the system,
mm-hmm,
if you're frustrated with the system, and maybe a safe choice like Joe Biden, because he's normal and not like Donald Trump. Maybe that isn't the way to go, because you need to get, according to this the suggestion of this Wilderness podcast, maybe Democrats need to inspire people and break through. Otherwise, you're going to get defeated by low-information voters that go, oh, yeah, that Donald Trump guy, he really likes to give it to the man,
even though
he's the
populism.
Richer man.
Right.
Yes.
Here he is. So this is Angela, who lives in Philadelphia. She talked to why she checked out of politics as part of the focus.
Checked out of politics.
Yeah, she's no longer involved. She didn't care about it, didn't follow it.
That's what gets me. Like, I don't understand. When I watch, when it's time for elections, I try to look at it to understand it. I don't understand it. I just turn it off and go to something else. I don't understand politics as a whole from my 30 years of being out of high school till now. All my focus was raising my son, who's autistic. So I try and look at the different things, but I know I have no understanding. What they need to do is have an understanding class with those who don't understand so they can get a better election going on, because I would love to be in the politics just to see what's going on. But seeing it now, I want no parts of it.
The problem is that they're talking about characters that people don't care about. So most of these stories that you can watch on television and cable with the 600,000 people that tune into CNN, you're like, they're talking about storylines that you have no interest in. To me, it's always like when it comes to serial stories on television, oh, are you watching that? I always feel like I've missed the boat, so I don't bother getting in. House of Cards. I don't know what happened previously on House of Cards.
Yes.
That's okay with me if they do the previously on Law and Order. Like, oh, okay, fine. To be continued? All right. But when all of a sudden it's like, well, why is that guy so upset with that other guy? Oh, they who needed to tune in back in September.
Yeah.
I don't want to do the work. These people don't want to do the work because then ultimately in the end, what is the payoff at the end? Right?
Well, I think the payoff is, you know, you just being in the know as opposed to not being in the know. But beyond that, if you want to talk, as they say, right now, what's being talked about? Impeachment impeachment is not on the campaign trail. All the candidates will say, nobody's talking about impeachment. They're talking about things like health care. They're talking about things that affect their own lives. Could be guns, gun rights, or, you know, gun control. But they're talking about things that deal with real life, not the kind of beltway bubble. But this, what this did and what they, how they got this information, they took four focus groups. They only had 10 people in each of these focus groups in four different cities to really drill down. And three of the four were dominated by people who voted for, say, Obama, Trump, and then the Democrats in 2018.
Okay.
Why are you shifting? And they're shifting is those are mostly low information voters who can't be bothered because they've got too full. Their lives are too busy to keep track.
Well, you watch when they have in Iran or Iraq, I guess Iraq, when they had democracy for the first time and people were walking past snipers to get the purple thumb, to vote. I don't know what the turnout was.
Yeah.
It's like the reason they vote is because it's something really on the line for these people. It's the difference between someone sweeping up your husband and your kid and killing them and taking everything you own. I better go vote. If I've got democracy, I better vote. I love the fact that in America, we have people that are completely disengaged. It means, and that's why I've said it before, I'll say it again, I love Donald Trump because he has reduced the office of the presidency to the lowest it's ever been. And because of that, it makes the media upset because the media loves the president's position as long as it's Democrat. I love the fact that you can say, hey, look at this. The Dow is almost at 30,000. Look at this. We're 3.4% unemployment. This is the most employed we've ever been. And then we have this guy in the White House. It shows you it doesn't matter who's sitting in the office. Just continue to put conservative judges in place. It doesn't matter who's sitting in that office. Everything will continue to function normally. Except if it's Bernie Sanders.
I was going to say, believe me, it matters. Let's put Bernie in there to test your thesis, John.
We'll have him try socialism, even though it's failed every single other place in the world. All right.
You wish.
I wish socialism hadn't failed. I wish it hadn't failed.
You wish that it had failed. So we've argued about this socialism.
Where does it work?
Where? All of Scandinavia. They've been more successful over the last 50 years since World War II. Exactly. Yeah. That's what we're talking about. Bernie is not a socialist, then he's a democratic socialist, which is, what's the model of
what
socialism?
What does the middle class pay in Scandinavian countries?
Net.
What does the middle class pay in Scandinavian countries?
They pay for their free health care. That's what they pay for.
What do they pay?
What do they pay?
What's their taxes?
Their society, their taxes are like 65%.
That's right. Yeah. Try that in the United States. When middle class pays 12%, let's move them up to 60, see if people like that.
That's what works if everything is covered.
We ran out of music.
Yeah, that's right. That's your fault.
Right back. Here we go. You text us. It's the State Roofing text line. 98973, 98973. Thanks, everybody, for tuning into the Tom and Curly Show here. 9 to noon every day. Right, Tom? On Cairo?
You bet.
That's right. Lock it in,
baby. Prime spot.
Lock it in. You can write to us again at mynorthwest.com. A story that we were talking about earlier in the pre-show meeting. Yes, we do have a pre-show meeting. Jacob's like, does anybody here have a hobby? And was Jacob's hobby was riding a bike?
Well, that was the question. I was considering, and based on this article, it made me think about some biking is something that some people say that they would do as a hobby, but I really just use it as transportation to get to and from work.
Yeah, if it has utilitarian purpose, it's no longer considered a hobby. It's
right. Like Maj Podge is not, or decoupage is not, doesn't have utilitarian purpose unless you actually work in a Maj Podge factory.
you create works of art that's considered irrelevant to value. But if you do it because you want to land a gallery spot, then all of a sudden, it becomes work.
Nobody buys a glue gun expecting to go to work with their glue gun, right? Those are hobbies. I said a hobby is something you buy off the shelf.
Yeah.
At Hobby Lobby.
And the question is, does anybody have hobbies anymore?
Yeah.
Because we are so, the economy, a chunk of the economy is built on side hustles. The gig economy is based on people doing extra things. And if you see time as money and you're sitting around just having a hobby, just doing something you like for the, you know, just for your own pleasure, that's easily seen as, wait a minute, you should be monetizing this time. You can't waste your time like that. You could be driving an Uber. You could be doing all sorts of things that are more valuable.
This is not the perspective of the average American. The average American has a bunch of hobbies. I believe.
No. Okay, so the suggestion here is that we don't, that hobbies have kind of been frittered away because now we're spending so much time. For instance, in this job, John, if I was retired, if I had no claims on my time, there are millions of hobbies that I would pursue. But because this job is so all-consuming, I feel like, well, rather than doing something that whatever somebody might consider a hobby, I really should watch more CNN or Fox News or read this or that, because anything and everything that we do on this show plays into the show. The suggestion here is that that's happening to more and more of us. He's arguing against that. He's actually taken up birding.
And he says
that is something that is basically, it doesn't do the world any good. He's not going to be a better, you know, a better person necessarily, except he's happier. Uh-huh. He's not going to set the birding world on fire because he saw seven more birds in Ohio. He considers that something to advocate for. What he's saying is that a lot of us don't feel like we have the time or energy to do it because our jobs are all consuming, or we have side gigs, or we feel like we need to monetize our downtime. Mm. Now, he's not talking about raising kids. I mean, obviously, you're raising kids. That in some ways is a loss leader.
What you think about with people, especially around here, fishing. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. How many people boating?
Nobody goes fishing, though. I mean, very few people actually go fishing, do you think? I mean, most of us? How many people do you know spend a... What?
There are a lot of people that fish.
I know, but what do they...
None of your friends fish.
That's right, and none of your friends fish.
That's not
the
true.
The point is,
I've got a friend.
The suggestion is, I know one guy who fishes, and he doesn't do it very often because he's too busy.
Oh.
It's not that fishing can't be done. It's just, my guess is more people fished 50 years ago than they do now. You know, in terms of percentage.
Yes.
Because people's lives are much more...
Busier?
They're busier, or they're more actively involved in their own jobs and their side hustles. I don't know. I mean, that's just an argument.
Yeah.
I think we'd be better off if we had more hobbies.
Yeah.
In fact, we're going to start one tomorrow. We're going to both learn to...
Huh?
What? Decoupage, I guess, is it.